good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. Before we get on with this Fan Friday edition of the podcast, we wanted to remind you guys that this football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. What a group that is. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. I'm one of those people. Ben's one of those people. You crazy allies of the podcast are part of that as well. I'm very excited for the end of the week because it is everybody's favorite day. It is Fan Friday. We have so many questions that we have to get to, Ben, but you made it to another end of the week. You've got another Eagles game to watch this weekend. I'm not sure if that was a good thing to remind you of or a bad thing at this point, but before we get going, how are you, my friend? Is the mental state good?
Listen, Trevor.
Yes.
Imagine your team being 0-2.
No, I can't. I just can't. I'm sorry.
0-2 against the spread.
I can't.
And yet still just betting your team covering a 4.5-point spread against the Bengals, because that's where I'm at mentally. So I don't know if that's damaged, ridiculously confident, absurd, but that me? Yeah. No, Eagles are going to win by more than a touchdown. No problem.
I don't know about all that, my friend. We might have some Eagles questions that we are getting to in this Fan Friday, but as we are no longer in the Summer Scouting Series, you guys know that that just means it is a power hour. We are taking questions from you guys on social media, whether it was Twitter or Instagram or the TDM Premium Slack. We're going for 60 straight minutes. Knowing us, probably more than 60, because we often like to flirt with that line where we go over an hour, but y'all ask awesome questions. We love entertaining you as much as we can, and for some reason, you guys like us hearing us talk that much as well. So, Ben, ready to get it going? First question?
Hang on.
Okay. All right.
No. Yes, I'm not prepared.
Okay, all right. I'm glad that you at least...
I just center myself, check in, dive in.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
It's all about the, finding your center of the universe before Fan Friday is very important.
Have you ever done like high elements course, like ropes courses, challenge courses?
Yeah, no, of course I have.
Yeah. So like before you go to climb, you have to go like spotter ready, belay on belay, climb away.
You know,
you gotta do that before Fan Friday. You gotta go, you ready? And then internally you go, yes, I am prepared.
We should start doing that because we're all about safety here. You know, we've got to make sure that we make it out alive so that we're back on Monday for another crazy week. But I'm actually gonna start. How do I say it? How do I say it to you first?
So like if you were the climber, you would go belay on.
Belay on, Ben.
And then I would go on belay.
On belay.
Yeah, our belay is right. And then you would announce that you're climbing.
I'm climbing. Yeah.
And then we would say climb away, and then you could start your climb.
Okay. All right. Well,
I miss challenge courses, man. I got to find somewhere to.
It sounds like you're a true vet of the challenge courses.
For three years in the summer, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm more of a dabbler. You know, I've done like one or two, so I wasn't as fresh on it. But, you're bringing your own expertise to the podcast. We love
you
to
ever
see
wanted
it.
To do a high element. Let me know. I got a harness. I'll get some ropes. We'll get you up there, brother.
Ben's bringing his own harness. BYOH.
Yeah,
no matter
harness.
Where he is. You invite Ben out anywhere. He's got the hard hat and the harnesses in the car.
Listen,
anytime you are ready to go.
Those camp issued harnesses, man. When you had to wear them for a long time, a lot of climbers. You found yourself wanting a more comfortable, expensive option. I'll just leave it at that.
First question's from Darren. He asked me this on Instagram. We're starting with Instagram because I don't want to forget you guys out there. There are a handful of questions that we get every week, and sometimes we'll leave them for the end, but this week we're switching up. We're starting with Instagram. He said, should the Falcons fire Dan Quinn and place your old friend Dirk Koetter as head coach in the interim? He also asked, if this happens, do they look to trade Grady Jarrett and Julio Jones? He said, I would say yes to all. My logic is this. You get the number one overall pick. Trevor Lawrence. This is Darren still talking, not me. Get the number one overall pick. Get Trevor Lawrence. You have Calvin Ridley, who could become the wide receiver one. Wide receiver depth is stacked for 2021. With the assets that you get from Jarrett and Jones, you could potentially be grabbing guys like Tufele, Roche, Rousseau. With the Saints and the Bucks having aging QBs, they could be in rebuild mode right now and could steal the division in a couple of years. What do we think? That's a lot of questions. The big scenario there for Atlanta. What do you think?
Tricky. Yeah. So firstly, trading Grady Jarrett, trading Julio Jones, both of them in the second year of extensions. Oh, shoot. SpotRack's got a really loud video ad. Give me a second. With both of them on a...
They gotta make sure that you are hitting that product placement.
Yeah, no, I they're preventing me from doing the podcast, what it is doing.
Preventative product placement. Wow.
Right. The cap hits on a trade for either would be monstrous. Remember that when you trade a player, you are still on the hook for his signing bonus cash, and it will accelerate onto that years of cap. You won't be able to keep it prorated. So for Julio Jones, who's only 2 years into a $25 million signing bonus, for Grady Jarrett, who's only 2 years into a 18 million dollar signing bonus, it's a lot of money you're gonna eat in a year in which the cap is expected to go down. So it's very tough to it's gonna be tough to trade those big contracts. Furthermore, with Jarrett only in his late 20s, with Julio Jones only in his early 30s, I don't think these are players who are prohibitive to a rebuilding effort. I think that you could very realistically turn this coaching staff over with a quarterback like Matt Ryan, who probably still has a few good years left in him, sure, with an offensive line that I think is improving with a couple of young players.
Yeah, I'll
and
give you that.
Be competitive within the framework of Julio still being one of the five best receivers in the league, with Grady Jarrett still being one of the best rushing under tackles in the league. So I don't think you need to get rid of those guys. I understand that you want to do it for draft capital, but this is also not a year to really be banking on the draft. There's going to be a ton of uncertainty,
right,
given the way that college football is falling out. And also, if you're moving on from Dan Quinn, Thomas Dimitroff's one of the longest tenured general managers in the league, brother. I'm not sure you're going to be keeping the same front office coaching, front office and scouting staff. And so you really don't want to be putting all your eggs in one basket of a draft if A, you're not sure you're going to keep Thomas Dimitroff long term, or B, you have a new front office and you don't know how well they're going to perform in the draft. So to me, it is frustrating that Atlanta's playing poorly. Mm-hmm. It is frustrating how the Dan Quinn era has ended. I do believe that in the event that Atlanta truly removes themselves from playoff contention over the next few weeks, that firing Dan Quinn and seeing if you can get a spark from Dirk Cutter, seeing if you get a spark from who's the DC? Raheem Morris. Seeing if you can get a spark there with some changes is a good idea. Get some of your young players out there. But I would be approaching the coaching staff higher with an eye on being competitive in 2021 and 2022. You have enough good veterans where I think that can be the case. So coaching staff change, I think, makes this team immediately better, especially if you get it right, such that you don't have to go through a full rebuild.
I'm totally with you. Head coach, moving on from him and probably moving on from Dimitroff makes a lot of sense for this Atlanta team. But I would not say we're at the point where we're just blowing up the really good players on the roster. Like, they're not trying to get to Carolina level. I don't think that would be a good maneuver for the Atlanta Falcons. Just totally going, okay, we're resetting every single portion of the franchise from top to bottom, including everybody on the roster. That's not a good look. And I don't think that the Falcons would benefit as much as you think they would from that, like, full-scale tank of all of the talent that they have on the roster. A change in leadership? Yes. You know, clean the front office, clean the coaching staff. I think that that's probably what you're going to have to do after this year. But, yeah, really, I think that they're going to get rid of Dan Quinn pretty fast here. I think that the Falcons are probably going to lose a couple of more games, and depending on how they lose them would be definitive of how the timetable is for them moving on from him. I don't think Dan Quinn's coaching his team next year. So at this point, it's just a when, not an if thing. But let's pump the brakes on the full-scale tank. Although, of course, my imagination, my maddened brain loves the thought of it. But Michael asked this one from Instagram. Question for Fan Friday that my girlfriend wanted to ask because she doesn't like football, but she really enjoys the Fan Fridays. Wow, shout out Michael's girlfriend. He didn't say her by name, but shout out Michael's girlfriend.
Big ups, nameless girlfriend.
Being an ally of the pod, we really appreciate you listening. She asks, what is the best fall food drink combo? So you get like one food item and then one drink with it. What gives you that perfect fall feeling?
I've moved to Michigan. I've been in Michigan for a year now. This will be my second fall in Michigan.
Big Matt Patricia guy.
Not that. My favorite fall food? Matt Patricia, baby. They do cider mills up here. You ever been to a cider mill?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so it's a big Michigan thing. It wasn't in, like, where I was in PA. It wasn't a thing at all. It's like going to like a pumpkin patch. It's like going to like a corn maze, right? It's okay. Like a farm activity.
Okay. All right.
But these cider mills, it's all the apple trees. You can go into the apple orchard. You can pick, you know, a whole bag of apples, buy them for super cheap, bring them home. Like man-made apple crisp out of it last year was great. But then you get like fresh made cider. Like you walk into like, I think it's a distillery. Maybe that's not the right word, but like you're like, hey, can I have a mug of apple cider? And they're like, sure. And then they go to like the machine that is making the cider. It's not like it's not even in jugs yet. They're like, boom, there it is. And that stuff slaps, brother. I mean, it's bitter in like the way, like it's like cider. Like you drink it, and you have to smack your lips after, but it's so good. Get some of that. Roll yourself over to the bakery shop. Because there's always like a little bakery shop at these places too.
Oh, you would. You would.
Oh, I would. And my tummy's got no problem with it. We roll on over, get ourselves a little pumpkin bread, a little cream cheese frosting.
Ooh.
You hear what I'm talking about?
Wow.
Get that with apple cider. That's my fall move. That's the Michigan like lifestyle. There's a lot of it where I'm like, all right, Michiganders are weird. Cider mills, they do right.
This is strong. That was a strong answer.
Yeah. When Michael's girlfriend, who shall remain nameless, asked it.
Wow. No, okay. So I've got two different ones, and they're two very different feels. One is, now you got to remember, I'm from Florida, grew up in Florida. So fall does not mean a lot to me traditionally. We have two seasons in Florida, hot, lesser hot. Like that's it. That's all it is. And it's not even a certain time of the year because it is 85 on Christmas morning, guaranteed every time. You know, so it's not, we really don't have these definitive seasons. But when I think of like a rare fall day that I've had in the past, you open up the doors and the windows, you get out on the porch, you're just sitting there loving life. You got some fresh baked cookies on your left and an ice cold glass of milk, not with ice in it actually, but just an ice cold glass of milk in the other hand. And you were just sitting there enjoying the cool weather at like sundown. That is like peak fall for me. And also on the flip side, the other answer that I have, any state food, like state fair food.
Right. Yeah.
With water, because Lord knows the sodium content is through the roof. So whether
you're trying to eat a funnel cake with anything heavier than water, you're going to die.
I thought of fair food and I was like, okay, fried cheese, funnel cake. Right. Giant turkey legs. Yeah, I'm like, what's the best pairing I could get here with a different drink? And I can't come up with anything, because when you think of like state fair food, the only real drinks that they serve is that lemonade, you know? And I'm
right,
not
that lemonade, which is like you could chew it. There's so much sugar in it. You could literally like put the granules between your teeth. Again, I'm saying this is a full compliment too. There's no criticism in my voice. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right. So like I couldn't pair any of those things with the actual lemonade, because the lemonade is so strong. It's not like it's a, you know, like a one in one with a food item, but like state fair food is my other answer for fall, because normally Weather starts dipping a little bit. You put on the flannel and jeans. You're walking around at the state fair. You're eating like crap because the calories don't count. It's like that's a very fall feeling to me.
Cookies and milk is such a I live in Florida or I live down south answer, because like, brother, cookies and milk to me is like, that's a Tuesday. Like that's every day. Like that's just like,
no,
like there's no season up here in which you could be like, oh, you know what? This is not appropriate cookies and milk time. If it's the winter, it's hot. It's just hot chocolate. It's just milk that's warmer and also has more chocolate in it. We have solutions to this problem. So like that, like, oh, when it gets nippy enough outside to eat cookies
that's
and milk.
That's me, man.
Yeah, 10 months a year, I've got that. That's no problem.
That's me. That's me, dude. Drew, we're going to the TDM Premium Slack now. Drew, whose name in the Slack is Dylan Gabriel QB1, said, I need y'all's reactions to this. And this is probably a terrible question/content to bring up on a only audio medium. But he just posted a Twitter screenshot that said, "Are you ready for hashtag Fat Bear Week?"
Are you unfamiliar with Fat Bear Week, Trevor?
Next week, what is this? Is this like a national park or something?
We talked about Fat Bear Week last year.
Holds its annual competition so you can judge which chubby bear takes this year's title. Here's a pick of this year's winner. It says 435 pounds. There is no way in hell this bear is only 435 pounds.
Yeah. So
there's no way this bear only weighs 60 more pounds than Mekhi Becton. There is no way.
How many Mekhi Becton's
we actually does this have? Bear we actually have a how many Ben Solaks versus Mekhi Becton question next, yeah. Which is a great transition. Right. But
okay, so there's a national park in Alaska. I think it's Katmai National Park. I may be pronouncing the That's, name misremembering
yeah,
the name.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Cool. Every year they basically have a bunch of photos of bears who are storing up for the winter, preparing for hibernation, that they take at the national park. Ton of grizzlies, like humongous, terrifying looking dudes.
This bear's huge!
And they just post all the photos in a giant bracket. And you just vote throughout the week. You're like, that fat bear is better than that other fat bear. And the best thing is they don't say, like, your qualifications are fatness. It's just like, here's a picture of a bear, here's a picture of a bear. Which bear deserves to be Fat Bear of the Week? Read that how you wish. What is your, how, what's, what, spiritually, what does that mean to you?
It's like a 2-ton bear. I'm looking at this bear. This is like a 2-ton bear.
Yep.
If this bear went over a bridge, it might be too fat.
The bear who won last year, I can't remember the name, but it was, I remember the photo distinctly in my head because, like, it was like, let's say it was on four legs. Let's say it was like, you know, 4 feet tall on four legs, like 3 feet tall on four legs, right? So okay. Like, you know, like it's up to your belly button.
Sure.
That's up to your rib cage. When it was on four legs. Its belly is about 3 inches off the ground. It's I don't know how it's walking. Like, what if it gets to a hill? Wouldn't it just stop? Like, it can't get its belly is just there. Like, its legs are so stubby. It is so round. It looked very cuddly, if we're going to be honest, but also could kill you. So, yeah, Fat Bear Week is
Fat
is
Bear
the
Week,
month.
Man.
Dude, look forward to it every year.
All right, Fat Bear Week. There we go.
September 30th this year.
Yeah, speaking of cookies and milk. Outside, just enjoying the fall. Fat Bear Week, baby. Adam said, how many Ben Solaks would it take to stop Mekhi Becton? I told you guys we were transitioning. How many Ben Solaks would it take to stop Mekhi Becton if he was a pass rusher?
Mm-hmm.
And how many Trevor Sikkimos would it take to stop Minnesota prospect Daniel Falele if he was rushing the passer?
Okay, so for those of you who don't remember, Mekhi Becton, tackle out of Louisville, 6'7", 365 pounds, runs a 5.05.
What's Daniel Falele? What is he, 6'8"?
Falele is like 6'9", 400.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Very casual. I said that way too casual. I was just like, yeah, all right. Okay, yeah.
I thought about this long and hard. It's difficult because if Becton's like upright off the line and I can cut him, then I only need like 4 or 5. If he's smart and he like really lowers that center of gravity and doesn't give me like a thigh or a waist to try to cut him at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And try to build a pile up. We're talking about just Becton pushing a sled made of Benjamin Solaks that we're dealing with like probably 6 or 7. But what you're assigning at least one of me to each leg.
Yeah. Right. Right. It has to be one minimum. Right. Yeah.
Which is mostly just to break the momentum. Another one to get into the torso, and then everybody else has got to just get behind that Ben Solak and just like use him like a battering ram and just kind of like hold the point on him. He'll slowly compress.
Ram Solak.
Like his spine will break. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, Mekhi Becton will
Wait,
make him
you're
into
sacrificing your own clones in this scenario?
Not, I've got 6 of me. No one needs 6 of me. Why get one of them done? But we just kind of reinforce that point. Yeah, hopefully if somebody teaches him like, you know, a swim.
Right.
Then it's over. Like, there's no answer. But if it's a bull rush, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, I had, depending on the pass rush moves that Mekhi Becton could utilize on the small army of, or platoon, I should say, of Benjamin Solaks, I had 7 or 8. I said 7 or 8, and you could get it done. You could stop him.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you could just consistently attack his legs, and he might get too tired and, like, fall over, and then you got him on the ground. And okay, so then you'd win there.
I like to think it would take one, and at the snap, I would be like, Mekhi, we don't need to do this. And Mekhi seems like a nice guy. He'd be like, you know what, you're right, because this would hurt you a lot. And then we would just hang out.
I had five or six for me with Daniel Falele, but I feel like that's probably too little. Maybe six. Maybe six is the magic number. Six might be the magic number to stop him. Again, you can go for the. You could just like occupy two dudes on the legs, and then yeah, no, I get confidence if four of me could block the rest of them. No, we're good. Six, yeah, six minimum or six maximum.
Yeah, six obviously here the magic number for how many of yous would it take to block insert gigantic number here.
I'll take him one on one. Give me some pads.
Nope.
Yeah,
I like you as my co-host. I don't want you to leave.
Slabs McGee asked, what are your favorite controversial regular season moments? Ah, shoot, it says regular season, because I was going to bring up the Dez caught it, because Dez absolutely caught it.
No, I didn't.
No, he did.
I was going out to Hibachi with my buddy Nick Fleming, with whom I was on the drum line in high school.
This story better be worth it, because you just gave Nick a free shout out on one of the most popular football podcasts in Argentina. So you, but like this better be worth it.
Shout out to that dude in Croatia who was like, hey, can I get a good morning Croatia?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good morning Croatia. What's up, baby?
But anyway, Nick, we were going out and it was that weekend. It was his birthday and his birthday was in January. And I was listening to the game on my phone as I was driving to his house. And I heard what was happening, but I couldn't see the play because I was just listening to it. So I ran into the Fleming's house, like opened the door, did not introduce myself, and just sprinted to the living room. Like, just like there's like people there. He's got family there. And I was like, what happened? And the entire room went quiet. And I was like, shoot. And I was like, hello, I'm Ben. I'm Nick's friend. Does anybody have the Green Bay Dallas game on? And they're like, yes, it is. And I watched it. I was like, that's an incompletion. And it was, because he didn't catch it.
No, he did catch it. It's one of the more tragic moments. Do you have a moment other than the Dez moment?
Well, no, yeah, because that one was the playoffs. The Fail Mary is the one that I think most clearly sticks out to me. There's a lot of ones that are really frustrating. And it's funny because, like, I can the Michael Gallup offensive pass interference against Jalen Ramsey to end that game. Like, that's just, like, was this year. And to me, that's such a bad call at that stage in the game. Like, I feel like there's a lot of ones that you just forget about because of how frequent they are.
Right.
Whereas the playoff ones stick in your mind because, obviously, the impact is greater. But the Fail Mary was just such a joke because it served as such a good reminder of the fact that, you know, there's three referees with an angle on a play and none of them want to commit to a call. So they just kind of make hand signals and hope it's the same. It's like when there's like a fourth and goal sneak and they go running up to the pile to like figure out where the quarterback is on the ground. Brother, he's been on the ground for ages. Doesn't really matter where the ball is now, does it? You got to make a call. That's always so frustrating because like, whether or not the call ends up correct or not on replay, it's just as a reminder that like there's a bunch of refs on the field. Sometimes they don't go to have a good angle at things, so we're just going to guess and hope.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess the Fail Mary is probably the biggest one. There's a bunch of postseason ones. The Dez one, the Nicole Roby Coleman one a couple years ago. You know, like these are. I was trying to think of regular season ones,
Roby
but you're
Coleman
right.
Is yeah, that's playoffs as well.
Right, right.
That's
all I got. I couldn't think of any other ones that were in the regular season. I'd have been searching for like hours on that one.
Yeah, it is a good question for that reason, because the first three that come to your mind
are playoff ones. Right, right.
Man, it's easy to remember those, like I said.
Daniel asked, what's the weakest position group on a playoff contender and then the strongest group on a bad team?
It's a really good question. I like it a lot. And it kind of... Right, like I think a little bit of it does depend on who you define as a playoff contender and who you don't define as a playoff contender, right? And kind of figuring that out, because I think the first group that immediately comes to mind in terms of a great group on a non-playoff contender is Atlanta and the wide receiver room.
Right, I have them written down. Yeah,
yeah, and like, is Russell Gage a great wide receiver three? Probably not. Is Alameda Zacchaeus a good wide receiver four? Yes, because I loved him coming out of Virginia. It doesn't matter. but like with just Julio and Calvin, right? Like you're talking about a truly unbelievable wide receiver one and two duo, arguably the best in the league. I think the only team that you've got that can go up against that is probably Gallup and Cooper in Dallas, and I would edge it Atlanta in that regard. I don't think Arizona with Larry Fitz where he is right now kind of is in the conversation.
Hold on, are you talking about just like best one two in the league? Like
Evans Godwin.
I was about to go straight through this fiber optic internet and slap you straight in the face.
I would have accepted it. That would have been fair.
Also would have been impressive if I knew how to do that.
Yep. Then the team that I have down for playoff contender who's got a prohibitive unit is Seattle's defensive line. Seattle's pass rush. I love that linebacking room. I think that safety room, that corner room is going to be solid. I think they got some work to figure out there in terms of they've got some guys like, you know, Blair just got injured. They got to integrate Ugo Amadi and get Quentin Dunbar up to speed and whatever, but I think they're okay. Defensively on that line with Bruce Irvin injured, you need one of LJ Collier, Darrell Taylor, who's still banged up, I believe, or Allen Robinson to become a high impact pass rusher. And I don't think there's a chance you get it at all. This is going to be a team that's getting all of its pass rush out of, you know, players like Puna Ford and Benson Mayoa. Like, it's just that is not a winning recipe. They're going to have to score so many points in the postseason because they're not going to be able to move guys like Aaron Rodgers off his spot. Move a guy like Dak Prescott off his spot. And that's just a nightmare situation. So we're going to get a really good look at Seattle against, I think, a really solid offensive line, a really solid passing attack in Dallas. I think there's a good chance Dallas hangs 40 on them, and it really reinforces that, yes, Seattle's offense got to figure it out, but defensively they need pass rush help so bad.
I had two for each. Seahawks pass rush was one of them that I said was the weakest in a playoff room, and then the Niners wide receivers was another one that I mentioned. If they get Debo back, that's nice. But
they'll be fine when they're healthy.
Yeah, I think they will. Maybe. We'll see.
Debo Ayuk-Bourne? I like that.
We'll see. Weakest rooms on, or best groups on non-playoff teams, Atlanta's wide receivers is one that I wrote down. And then the Redskins front seven is the other one that I wrote down.
I almost said the Eagles defensive line.
Oh, wait, there's no Redskins in the NFL. Sorry, the Washington football team.
Yeah. No, I almost said the Eagles defensive line for top position group for a non-competer. Eagles defensive line, Eagles tight ends, but I don't like the implication, so. I'm just not mentioning them for now.
Austin said, what are your top five places to get a milkshake? I stuck with like chain restaurants. I'm not doing local, because if I explain a local restaurant to you guys, it just doesn't make any sense. So I stuck with chains for my top five. Do you have a five?
No, and I'll be very clear as to why.
Okay.
Where are you guys ordering milkshakes at?
So like you've never gone to a...
I've gotten a milkshake from one place.
Okay, all right, hold on. Are you going to be, like, weird about this and say that, like, Dairy Queen, it's like a blizzard, so it doesn't count as a milkshake?
It's not.
Okay.
What are you talking about? It's not about... You don't drink it out of a straw.
All right, so five for me is Sonic. I think Sonic's got some underrated ice cream, milkshake, combo, whatever you want to call it, that'll make Ben happy. Chick-fil-A is my number four.
You can't... Okay, if you have Dairy Queen, we're going to have a conversation.
Cookout is three. I like Cookout, but sometimes Cookout, their milkshakes are like too frozen. And I know that that's a calling card of them. Like you can take it home and you can eat it with a spoon and it's got more consistency or it's more solid than a normal milkshake is. But like sometimes I'm not looking for that. Sometimes I just want to actually suck the nutrients through the straw and Cookout doesn't let me do it. At least not right away. Two, I've got Dairy Queen. Because I figured that this is what we were doing. Figured we weren't going to make it difficult. Guess I was wrong.
Just let me know when you're done.
All right, and then one, I cheated because it's a McFlurry. All right, you're up.
As a man, I'm 40. As a man who worked at an ice cream place for 4 years in high school,
jeez,
big
here
star,
we go.
Right off of Bridge Street, exit 303,
oh,
Route 80,
my God.
Pennsylvania. As a man who made...
Let me guess, you've still got the first pay stub that you got in your childhood room.
Millions of comets. Millions of comets.
What are you,
at
God?
Big Star, I'm here to tell you, as an expert in the field, if it is edible exclusively via spoon, it does not qualify as a shake. Milkshake is consumed through a straw. You may use a spoon if you would like. That's kind of weird, but I get it.
Okay, so then, like, what's your argument for Chick-fil-A? Because you freaked out when I said Chick-fil-A.
No, I was realizing what was going to happen. I was
preparing my argument.
Yeah, right, no, sorry, right. No. Chick-fil-A is a milkshake. Okay. Milkshakes are good.
So you just call it ice cream then?
It's a comet. It's a blizzard. It is in and of itself. It's like a flurry. It's got different names at different establishments, but it's all clearly in a family that is separate from milkshakes.
All right. Well, that's I lumped them all in there, and I gave the people a ranking because that's what we were asked to do by Austin, an ally of the pod.
You're a heretic. This is you are misleading
the
people.
You were too proud in your elitist, sweet ways.
There are rules in the universe. There are laws.
To just give Austin. Austin waited all week. Austin might have thought of this question on Monday. He's like, you know what? I really like this podcast. Yeah. Ben and Trevor do. I listen to it every day. I'm going to get in on Fan Friday this week. I'm going to ask him what their favorite milkshake is. And you know what? I gave it to him.
And when he asked it thinking to himself, man, I love McFlurries. I love Blizzards. I know those are great. I wonder where good shakes are.
Don't.
I hope that they answer the question about milkshakes with actual milkshakes.
Don't.
So that I can have this information.
Don't you dare speak for Austin.
Oh, thank God you told Austin that Dairy Queen's Blizzards are good. There's no way Austin knew that previously.
We're not giving people new information. This isn't a breaking news podcast. It's pre-recorded.
I'm going to Steak and Shake and I'm having a milkshake today exclusively to spite you. Actually, that won't work because you would agree that was a shake. I'm going to Dairy Queen today and I'm having a Blizzard exclusively to spite you. Next question.
Connor. Connor, set this one up. This is an elaborate setup here. It is the Wing Bowl featuring the Sycamore Ranches. Gotta talk about that name. Versus the Solak Blue Cheeses. Yikes. Even worse. You are both going for the two-point conversion for the win. Like, at the same time, how are we doing this? Are both offenses and defenses on the field at the same time?
Wait.
Ben.
College football.
What if in college football... Okay. You just played. Oh my God!
You don't know. Well, I guess you would be like the stands would be cheering, the audience, the fans. Fans, that's the word. Not
we
audience,
just
not
did fans. Something here.
Yes,
Connor. Connor, I'm sorry. You get absolutely 0% of this credit, my friend. I'm stealing this idea and
with it. Like you all, like your offense scores. And then everybody turns around and just stares, and it's 100 yards away. So it's not like you can like easily tell. But if you score, you like turn, you're like, what's happening? And then you just have to tell which jerseys are celebrating to be like, dang, we got to do this again. And what if they made you switch fields? You have to walk across and meet each other at the 50 and then walk back over to the other five.
Gosh.
Yeah, this is good. We need to work on this.
Wow. All right. We're going to workshop this a little bit more to make sure we, you know, get all the kinks out of it. But this is a brilliant foundation here. Okay. So sorry. Continuing the question. You're both going for two and for the win. You have to call a wildcat play. What is your wildcat formation called, and what play do you run to win the game?
Very easy. My wildcat formation is called 41-33. My play is the Philly Special. Next question.
Okay, you know, like that's it's extremely hard for me to argue against that. I really wish that.
I'm like, that's the thing is like the most famous play in my particular fandom is a wildcat play. You know what I mean? Like that's what I would have. I like thought of other answers, but I was like, none of them mean as much to me as this does.
My wildcat play, it would be called Heisman. And what it would be is my running back, it'd be set up like a power run, you know, almost like a Cam Newton run, but the running back's in the backfield and he takes a snap and we're running as if it is that power run to the left or to the right. But then the tight end who was initially blocking sneaks off to the back of the end zone. We do a little jump pass Tebow style. That's why it's called Heisman. Yeah.
Every good wildcat play, like truly good goal line, short yards, wildcat play, ends with an unexpected pass.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's getting
the
snap.
Right.
Doesn't matter who's getting the toss and the handoff, whatever. At the end, and he's going to throw it. That's critical. That's a must-have.
All right, about halfway through, we got a lot more questions that we're getting to, but before we get to those, we got to tell you guys a special message from our friends at Visa, who tell us to help support our local businesses, whether they are our corner stores, coffee spots, favorite shops, local businesses have been there on your team supporting you and your community. They remember your orders. They call you by name. They're always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile for you. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, help your team score and choose a shop of a local business. While you're there, look for the contactless symbol and pay with a contactless Visa to help support your local community because where and how you shop absolutely matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. And we got one more. I got one more to read. It's a great transition with the NFL because this season you can get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays and see all of the plays in just 45 minutes with the condensed game feature. You can relive all the gutsy calls, the crazy catches, the wild comebacks, maybe the blundered controversial calls in the regular season that we were talking about earlier. Every game, every week. It is all the action, all the football that you can handle all in one place. NFL Game Pass is also the only place where you can replay every game all season long. You're also going to get the chance to learn from the league's best players with over 40, count them, NFL Game Pass film session episodes. You can go inside the game from the player's perspective, hearing from the mouths of guys like Deshaun Watson, Stephon Gilmore, Davante Adams, as they break down their own styles and games, and many, many more. NFL Game Pass also provides the access to the entire NFL Films archives. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. This one's a stacked question here. There's a lot to unpack. This one's from Steven. Do the following teams pick up the fifth-year options, and why? Browns, Baker Mayfield. Jets, Sam Darnold. Giants, Saquon Barkley. Broncos, Bradley Chubb. All of these players were hyped coming into the league, but I'm not so sure it's translated. Those were Steven's words, not mine. Ben, we got four guys and four fifth-year options to consider here. What do you think about these players?
Yes, no, yes, yes. So I think starting with
Baker. I have the same conclusion. Yeah.
Go ahead. Starting with Baker. Baker Mayfield set the rookie record for touchdown passes despite not playing the entire season in the 2018 Brown season. Now, I think that record's going to get broken by Burrow this year. I wouldn't be surprised if it does. Regardless, there was a moment. There was a prolonged weekly occurrence in which Baker Mayfield played good football. Then there was a year in which he didn't. And that year was concerning. And I think he built a lot of bad habits in that year that will take time to work out of him. He's constantly fading out of the pocket, rolling to his right. He doesn't have a consistent trigger when he's got stuff open, so on and so forth. The Browns are going to work through this year figuring out just how much they can get back to that 2018 Baker, which they saw, which they knew was good. And I think that they're going to get close. I've got faith in Kevin Stefanski, and I've got faith in Baker Mayfield individually, and I like what they've done as a marriage so far together. It's going to be a run-heavy offense, going to keep things easy for Baker, but that's okay. I think they're going to be able to demonstrably prove that they can get a starting caliber quarterback play out of Baker. And accordingly, they're going to take the fifth-year option on him, because even if his negotiation in a long-term contract gets difficult in terms of how good he is, he really, the fifth year will definitely still be cheap relative to what a starting quarterback usually costs. It is more than it usually is because the new CBA, I don't remember the exact details of it, but I think they'll take it. Versus Darnold, who, if we package these two quarterbacks together really quickly, while you could argue that Darnold has had more impressive throws than Mayfield has had over his career, which I would accept, when you can argue that Darnold's peaks have been higher than Mayfield's peaks, which I'm not sure I would accept, but I'm fine with the argument, Darnold's never strung it together for a couple of games, for a month, for enough weeks against enough good defenses for you to say with certainty, there's a way we can get this out of this guy for a whole year. Darnold has been volatile.
The weird part about it is, like, there's the Gase factor to it. Because I agree with everything that you're saying. But I think that, you know, in a vacuum, do you go, hey, do you pick up the fifth-year option on Sam Darnold? Well, no, probably not. I mean, like, he has not been good enough. And I think that there are Gase elements that exist. And then there are also elements where you go, well, you still wish that, like, Sam was maybe further along than he is. This one's the toughest one for me because I totally agree with you. I would say no. Like, I would not pick up the fifth-year option on Sam Darnold as of right now as we're doing this podcast here on, what is it, Friday, September 25th. I would not be picking up Sam Darnold's contract or his fifth-year option, but it's hard with that Gase factor, right?
It is. The concern here, the problem here, when it comes to Mayfield versus Darnold and acknowledging their context, is that I don't think you or I expect the Browns to be in a position where they could potentially draft a quarterback other than Baker Mayfield, whereas you and I expect that the Jets could be in that position.
That's a great point, too. Yeah.
Even if both teams get out of the top 10, brother, Jets traded Jamal Adams. They got themselves some ammunition, and the Browns don't have that. Accordingly, what we have to look at is, okay, maybe Darnold's worth the fifth-year option, but is giving Darnold another year to potentially figure it out under a different head coach worth the risk for the Jets?
Right.
Relative to the alternative?
I'd tell you no. I'd tell you no. Yeah.
And that's where we land, is that Darnold may get caught in an unfortunate situation where the Jets are selling on him, electing to go for a different quarterback because they've got a new general manager, different than the one who drafted Darnold, because they have a new head coach, different than the one who drafted Darnold, and they're in a position to do so, which is to some degree Darnold's fault. He didn't play that well, but largely Adam Gase's and ownership's fault for letting them have a bad roster under Adam Gase, right? So all of a sudden they're selling on Darnold for a lot of reasons outside of Darnold's control. Darnold could get traded somewhere else. The fifth-year option could still be available for that team. They could take it as they try to figure out what Darnold is. But there's going to be no incentive for the Jets to take that risk relative to the risk of drafting Justin Fields, Trey Lance, or even Trevor Lawrence, depending on where they end up. So that's why I'm a no on Sam and I'm a yes on Baker. It has some to do with how the players have played. I would argue Baker has been a better quarterback through his career than Darnold has been and has a better future projection. But some of it also has to do with the context of where both teams are in their team building and in the current strength of their roster.
What about Barkley? Barkley and Chubb are both yeses, correct?
Yeah.
Barkley's fifth year, so I looked up his contract because Barkley's contract's very interesting. You know, fifth-year contracts for running backs, normally it's this giant jump between what they were making as, I don't know, typically like a later drafted running back, I would say, and Barkley, who went, he went four overall, right? Or he went, what did
Barkley went two.
Barkley went two. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know why I blanked on where he got drafted. So he went two overall. Barkley's cap hit for his rookie contract has been $5.6 million, $7 million, $8.5 this year, and it goes to 10 next year. The fifth-year option for Barkley is just like 11.7, I think.
I think that was the projection pre-stuff moving around with the new CBA and with COVID. I don't know if that's still the same.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll see. But that's the thing. It's like, this is hard because I don't know what these dollar signs are.
It was just weird. For me because the gap is just not that different. It's like you're paying the same amount. Normally, that's not the case with 50-year options with rookies, you know?
Right.
So I think it's going to be a yes. I mean, I would think that it would be a yes for Barkley, one, because I don't think they're going to move on from him. Two, I don't know what the identity of this team is without Barkley. You know, if you move on, what are you saying as the New York Giants? What's your goal then? I get that. Look, I'm with everybody out there. Hey, you might not be wanting to pay a running back this much money, especially for one who's, as unfortunate as it is, has been banged up the last couple of years, now missing a ton of time this season with a major injury. You're probably not wanting to invest that much money into him over the next 2 years, but I don't know where the Giants are without Saquon Barkley. Like, he's their entire identity.
Mm-hmm. For players selected in the top 10 picks of the 2016 or 17 drafts, was Barkley 2017? Or was it 2018?
2018. He's 2018.
Frick me. 2018 draft can earn different fifth-year option salaries based off their performance. So Barkley, who has already made the Pro Bowl on the original ballot once, is going to be at least at the second highest tier of their fifth-year options. And if he makes the Pro Bowl again, then he will be at the highest possible tier of his fifth-year option. This is the thing with the draft classes at the end of the previous CBA, is that they're like, depending on which year you were drafted in, the way your fifth-year option is calculated has changed as they, like, you know, kind of incrementally accelerate from the 2000s and 2010 CBA to the 2020 CBA and how that uses fifth-year options. Very complicated. Yeah. Moral of the story is the Giants really like Barkley. The Giants think Barkley is a great player. Barkley had the high ankle sprain, which hurt him last year. Barkley's had the ACL, which will keep him out this year. But when Barkley is healthy, he's a top two running back in the NFL. And as long as the Giants believe that he's going to be healthy, they're going to be interested in giving him the fifth-year option. Bradley Chubb, who also is obviously dealing with his own health issues throughout his career in Denver, was a rookie record setter in his
right. No, I mean, like, they're not they're not moving on from Bradley Chubb at all. No.
Yeah. So Chubb had 12 sacks, which is the most ever had by a Broncos rookie, which, you know, Von Miller was once a Broncos rookie.
People forget that.
Vaughn had 15 sacks in that season. Chubb was a defensive rookie of the month. Chubb's rookie year was really, really good. And obviously now they've got a health question. So with Chubb, I think a little bit more so than Barkley, you could sit down when it's time to activate that fifth year and say, we're not sure this guy is going to be healthy ever again. And that might change the conversation a little bit. But for what he's produced on the field, I think Chubb translated. I know he said that I'm not sure these guys translated to their billing. people thought Chubb was as good as Garrett. I don't think Chubb was ever as good as Garrett.
No.
But to me, Chubb did deliver on his billing, and I would be surprised if they think he's going to be fully healthy. I would be surprised they didn't give him the fifth year.
Mitchell asked this question last week, and I'm not sure it's great for a podcast medium since we can't show examples, but I wanted to get to it because I think he's asked it multiple times here. Yes, what's the functional difference between cover three cloud and cover six? Now, I can try to explain it, and then you correct me if I'm wrong. But for cover three cloud, you're dividing the deep third. You're dividing the deep parts of the field into thirds.
Yep.
One corner is taking one third, and then both safeties are taking the other two thirds of the deep portion of the field. The cornerback to the other side of the line of scrimmage, he's taking the flat, and then the linebacker or nickel defender who is on the side of the line of scrimmage where there are more passing options, either a tight end or a slot receiver, they are having like a hook curl zone, but they're also taking that guy vertically. So that's where the cover three shell comes from. It's a corner and two safeties covering the deep thirds of the field, whereas cover six is a 4-2 split. So it looks like it's cover two. But the big difference here is the strong safety. So one of the cornerbacks is retreating, and he's taking a deep half of the field. Then the free safety is also taking the other deep half of the field. The strong safety then is keying in on the number two or number three receiver on that side of the line of scrimmage, and he's matching them if they go vertical. So it can look like cover two in the pre-snap, and it can act like cover three post-snap, but in reality, it's the free safety has his deep zone, one of the outside corners has a deep zone, and then the strong safety is matching the number two or the number three receiver on that side of the field if they go vertical. If they don't, then he's just staying in that like buzz, deep crosser, robber kind of like zone right behind the linebacker level. So that's what I've always known the difference between cover three cloud and cover six is.
Yeah, right. So that's right. That action by that safety is what we're talking about here. Your usual cover three, right? Two corners go back outside of the hashes, and then one deep safety in the middle of the field is cover three sky. And it's called sky because of the S in the front. That S indicates that it's a safety that's dropping down into that, you know, that first level of the zones. And he usually comes into a hook curl area. Whereas in cover three cloud, it starts with a C, a corner is the player that's staying down, which is to say that of the three high players, two of them are safeties in cover three cloud versus in cover six, where even though the field is divided into a three high zone, still only one safety is usually playing as your deep half defender. Then you have one safety dropping deep and one corner dropping deep. So both are two safeties high and one corner high coverages, right? You're both a three deep. And in both cases, you have two safeties that are deep and one corner who's deep, and then one corner stays underneath. It's just how the zones are divided up that changes a little bit. But they are, you know, analogous in that way. Yeah. They can look very similar on the field.
Yeah, cover six just has more, like, matching to it. Like, the strong safety, I think, is paying more attention to the two and the three, and that's why they can look similar in pre-snap, but then they can act differently when the play is actually going on. The strong safety is the big difference there. Josh asked, it's 4th and 7. From your opponent's 26-yard line, you're down by 4 with 6 seconds left. Give us your best play to win. And then he said who's throwing and who's running the routes. I didn't have who's throwing and running the routes because I just picked like the best players. But
so too far for a Hail Mary, 74 yards. Pretty much unless we have Mahomes at high elevation, I'm not trying to throw the ball all the way down the field. And even if I was, like, I'd be worried about Mahomes throwing out of the back.
No, you're on. Wait. Am I reading this wrong? It says you're on your opponent's 26.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Oh, you're right.
So you're on your opponent's 26.
Man, I had a whole, like, hook and ladder devised. And that's
Go for it. You do with 74 yards to gain. I'll do with 26 yards.
Yeah. My hook and ladder. The problem with most hook and ladders is that you throw, like, the 15, 18-yard curl, and then that guy flips it to the runner. But the runner's on the same side of the field as the curl was, so all the defenders are looking over there. So to me, I would run my 15 to 18-yard curl route, right? And then I would have that guy do the usual hook and ladder flip as per usual, right? A guy working to the sidelines. And the moment my guy working to the sidelines gets the ball on the hook and ladder flip, he works his way over to the hash. He starts moving upfield. And once he feels like he has gravity, right, then I have him turn, and he throws that thing cross field all the way to the other side, back, to the running back, where the running back is waiting with the entire offensive line and the quarterback, and the running back catches that ball deep lateral to the other side of the field, and now we've got, you know, big guys up front. We got a running back with the football. We got hopefully the defense skewed a little bit too far to the hook and ladder, and that's what we're going to try to move the ball down the field. You know, do your scramble drill, do your lateral drill, whatever. But yeah, those sort of plays are in my head really fun to try to think of how to do them appropriately.
Okay, so I got 26 yards to go, and there's only 6 seconds left, so they know that you've got to go into the end zone. So the zone coverage is going to be a little bit weird, but I think that they're going to do some sort of quarters. They're just going to have both of the safeties and both of the cornerbacks dividing the deep parts of the field and basically the end zone into fourths. So the way that I would attempt to attack that, I guess, now I'll put a disclaimer out there. I've never been an offensive coordinator, so I've never been able to devise something up and then see how it plays out in a game. If you came to this podcast thinking that I was a former offensive coordinator, I'm sorry to burst your bubble. But what I would do is, so let's say from the quarterback's point of view, I'm running a 3-by-1. So I got 3 wide receivers to my left. I've got 1 wide receiver isolated to my right. And I also have a tight end that's attached to the line of scrimmage to the right side. So then it's essentially a 3-by-2, but it's a 3-by-1 with a tight end attached to the end of the line of scrimmage. I'm having the tight end and the 1 wide receiver to my right just going vertical. Like, they're just getting vertical. They're occupying defenders. They're making them pay attention to them. They're not really getting much attention. The number 3 guy on my left side, I'm just having him go straight vertical, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to stress the far left 2 zones. So that half of the field with their 2 defenders, we're going to try to flood that zone and confuse those defenders there. So I'm going to have him just going to go straight up vertical. It's going to kind of be like a seam, like right up the middle, close to the middle. So he's going to flood what is the right side of one of those safeties, probably the free safety. And then the number 2 receiver, I'm going to have run all the way to basically where the end zone line is, and then he's just going to run an out. Then the 1 closest to the sideline is going to, I'm going to have him run a deep, skinny post. So there is the chance that the corner and the safety don't pass off their zones the way that they need to, and like maybe one of them gets like their eyes wide and they want to cut the route or something like that, and either the guy going to the out towards the sideline is getting the ball and he's reaching it out towards the pylon and maybe scoring, or if the safety crashes down on the guy who is taking the out route, then potentially that little skinny post could be open right there on the inside of the corner. Did that make sense?
I followed 65% of it. I'm positive it's going to work, though.
There's probably 65% completion percentage, so, you know, I'll take it.
Absolutely. Listen, you take a 65% play on 4th and 7 from your opponent's 26-yard line.
Nick said, congrats to... Man, this is terrible. Congrats to Trizzy Trey, we got to work on that name, and Nips McGee, that would be Ben. You two are America's next best rap duo. Clearly, we're not after the last segment that we just had. You both get to choose your own promotion meal at any fast food chain you choose. What are the meals that you are choosing?
All right, so I thought long and hard about this one, because I feel like if it's you and I, we have to, it's got to be some sort of like Fan Friday related meal, right? Because whenever we talk about food, it's always in relation to these questions, or it's always in relation to Fan Friday. So my thought was, in this hypothetical world, because this would never, ever happen, ever and otherwise, ever, but like if we got like, you know, Chick-fil-A and Popeyes and Checkers and Wendy's, like we got like a bunch of people all on board. I don't know, like you can get like Yum involved, right? Like Yum owns like Taco Bell and KFC and whatever. And then we make some sort of like Fan Friday list, right? Like, what's like the top 5 like chicken sandwiches? So we get like those 5 places, right?
All right.
And then if you like, you buy 1 chicken sandwich, and then if you go to another place and you show the receipt for the first chicken sandwich, you get that one 10% off. And then if you go to another one, you show both receipts, you get 20% off that one. And so you just get incrementally cheaper chicken sandwiches the more and more that you buy.
Mm.
And then it would be like the five Fan Friday. Insert food items here.
Wow.
And that would be cool, because it would be like Fan Friday.
Wow.
And you'd be getting like the top 5 list that we always talk about.
Mine's not that elaborate. Mine is just getting 20 wings at Wingstop. Like, that's it.
Right. Also that.
I mean, like, that's just, that's the meal. That's what I'd go with. That's it. You put way more.
A Wingstop deal where you either get like 6 canisters of ranch or 6 canisters of blue cheese, but nothing in the middle. Cannot go 50-50. Cannot get less. Cannot get neither. Make a decision.
Shane said, you are not allowed to watch this category for the rest of your life. One must go: movies, TV shows, or all sports except for football. Which do you get rid of?
I once again thought about this long and hard. For me, I really like, I didn't want to answer all sports instead of football because I really enjoy watching sports. And even like throughout the, like, obviously I'm a big Sixers fan, big like college softball fan. I'll watch pretty much any sporting event you put on. Like, I'm always glad to do so. But at the same time, I just didn't want to sacrifice movies and TV shows. I probably could. And if I were to choose between the two, I think it would be movies. But I think it's all other sports besides football. I think that that would hurt the least, even though, I don't know, it feels weird to say it on the sports podcast.
I always wonder with these questions, like, if I, like, I can't watch sports anymore, right? It, just for this question. Does that mean that, like, sports go on without me? Do I get to read about them? Can I just not watch them?
Like, imagine people reacting to the NBA finals. You're just not allowed to put it on.
I mean, like, that happens all the time, though. You know, like, I could be, like, out to dinner or something. Y'all are freaking out about the NBA playoffs. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm not really watching it. But
I'm okay with that because I know I could. Like, game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals, 3-1 down, Cavaliers are back,
sure.
Golden State,
sure.
Perfect season or whatever, sure. And, like, you just could not watch that? I mean, be big sad boy.
I mean, my answer is TV shows. Easy. Like, oh, no, wow. I didn't even think twice about it.
That's my last one. I feel like there's such a range of TV shows, and there's so much. Like, think about the hours of Scrubs versus the hours of, like, one movie. You know what I mean?
Sure, but I don't really watch TV shows anymore. I really don't.
Oh, I do.
So I think give me movies and sports. I would say no to TV shows. I'd have Alyssa just fill me in on the latest HGTV stuff that we'd be doing to our house.
Narrate the last episode of Peaky Blinders. Do the accents. Ready, go.
Could probably do it. Aiden said, congratulations. You were the announcer for one of your favorite team's preseason games. What is your bucket list from dawn to dusk on that day? I don't know if I have like a bucket list throughout the day, but I was always, when I was covering the Bucks, I mean, I was always at the stadium like 3 hours early. I just loved being there, man. Like, walking around the stadium, getting to my seat as one of the first people there. And like, if I'm a preseason announcer, that means that you have a credential that can get you basically anywhere. So like, you can walk on the field like 4 hours before the game and just like walk around the field and just take a look at things from the middle of the field and how it's going to look to the players and all that kinds of stuff. And so that would, I don't really have a bucket list of things, but that's how my day would start off. I'd get to the stadium, honestly, like as early as possible. I'd dress up to the nines. I'd have my suit game popping. I'd just be walking around the stadium hours before I even needed to do anything. I'd be so jazzed for that. That's what I did when I was just like a beat reporter. And so that's honestly something I miss a lot about not covering a single team this year.
I'd be up at, well, first, I don't think I'd sleep.
Yeah.
But I'd be out.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Left. Yeah.
Yeah. I would be in Philadelphia. I'd be calling an Eagles home game. And I would go to as many Wawas as necessary until a group of Eagles fans stopped me and were like, yo, you're Ben, so like, you're calling the game. Like, I would need to be recognized so badly, my fragile ego. So I would be like my 8th Wawa, getting my 8th cup of coffee. And people would be like, oh, you're Ben. I'd be like, yeah. Like, what's up? And they'd be like, oh, what do you think about the game? And then I would, like, get to talk to Eagles fans, like, random Eagles fan strangers. I love – one of the best things about Eagles fans, like, I met an Eagles fan in, like, the Chicago – in O'Hare Airport. Uh-huh. We talked about the Eagles for, like, 15 minutes. Everybody just, like – you know, like, you see an Eagles fan, you're like, all right, we are having a full discussion. Here we go. So have that conversation, to have that experience of, like, people know that, like, I'm going to be a part of that game. I'm going to be part of that broadcast and, like, be able to be part of the fan base in that way, I think is super cool. Then yeah, right. I would get to the stadium extremely early. I would be so excited for production meetings, right?
Because oh like, gosh, yeah, right? That'd be awesome.
People are like, oh, like, you know, we were in the meeting with, you know, Justin Herbert and,
right.
and you know, Coach Cristobal talking about this and like, you know, what's it like to be like this in the Pac-12? I would be like, I don't care about any of those questions. tell me about your pistol series, right? Like, I would ask like the most like not helpful for the broadcast, but I am objectively interested in these questions, just because you have them hostage. They can't go. They have to stay. So, you know, you run those. And then, yeah, like, I don't know. I would want to make the day as long as possible, make the event as long as possible. So yeah. I would just want to be with fans, want to be with other members of the production team, want to be down on the field. And you just want to like fully live that experience.
It's so cool. It's doing stuff as a media member is the coolest feeling. I was almost always one of the first people there, tried to be one of the first people there. And I was one of the last ones to leave. There were some people who were on some newspaper deadlines who were there a little bit longer than I was, but just enjoying that whole experience of being in the stadium. There's definitely nothing like it. All right, we're going to rapid fire these last three. Ready?
Go.
George said, rank these sad TV moments. Well, I guess this is topical. Rank these three sad TV moments. Will Smith's dad leaving him again, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. When Marshall's dad dies in How I Met Your Mother. When Dr. Cox realizes he's at Ben's funeral from Scrubs. Oh,
did not watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Number one is Scrubs, didn't know about the funeral. Number two is Marshall's dad.
I would say, oh man. Number one is Dr. Cox not realizing he's at Ben's funeral. And then the other two are just a toss up. I mean, I'll get emotional just thinking about both of them, man. That's just, oh man, that's you know, me saying that I have to give up TV shows. That means I don't have to live through any of these gut wrenching moments. Bit
right, exactly,
dude. These are those are the powerful moments that make you fall in love with a show, that really get you attached to a show. Those were phenomenal. The actors that were involved in all of those, because they were absolutely gripping. All three of those moments, awesome shows too. CF, who I just got to say this at Zeke's Bucket. He tweeted at me before I tweeted the Fan Friday question, drop the Fan Friday question, you coward. And I did, and this is the question that he got in. Top five goldfish flavors. So we had to get to it.
It was a priority. I love, like, there's no better way to participate in this podcast than to just make a request and end it with you coward.
Yeah,
I feel like that's
calling
like
us coward somehow. Yeah.
Locked on NFL Draft. Right. Okay. In order. Five colors. Is colors basically the usual cheddar ones? Yes. Okay. Is it cooler because they're colors?
Interesting.
Yes. Four, white cheddar. White cheddar, always better than cheddar under all circumstances. Three, flavor blasted extra cheddar. You're noticing a theme.
Okay.
Two is the pretzel ones. One is, I love the pretzel ones, brother.
All right.
I don't know why a pretzel tastes better when it's shaped like a goldfish, but it does. One is actual live goldfish. No, it's Parmesan ones. The Parmesan ones are elite. If anything else is your number one, you're outside your mind.
Okay, so I'm just going to say, like, I'm not a huge goldfish connoisseur. I've had...
Yeah, not a huge you connoisseur.
Okay, yeah, all right, here we go. Five for me is pretzels. If you get some pretzel goldfish, dip those bad boys in peanut butter.
Yep.
We're talking here.
Cook them with gas.
We're talking. Number four is the flavor blasted nachos one, just because they have the most spice to them. Three, I have Parmesan. I've really only had it like once or twice, so it might be just like totally elite. I'm just forgetting about it. Two, I have extra cheddar, and then one, I have original, simply because I've had original the most, and I feel like I owe it to it out of respect.
No, Parmesan's better, but it's okay. We'll forgive you for now.
Fantasy Reaper said top five things that you really want to do, but you haven't had the chance to do them yet. He also said top five things that you had the chance to do, but you didn't try. And I thought about this for a little bit, and like I couldn't exactly like think of something. Not that I'm sitting here like, I've lived a life with no regrets, but like I didn't think of something that was as good as the first one. So we're going to go top three things that we haven't done yet that we really want to try.
Yeah. Okay. Number one for me is... like you go actual like ocean fishing in the Gulf off of Florida. That's my number one bucket list thing to do is to catch mahi mahi off the coast of Florida and then bring it home and then make food out of it and then eat it. Like that's just like, if they're like, you can only do one thing and then you die, that's what I would do. It seems so cool. Number two is actually like, I would like,
wait, like right when you get off the boat, do you die?
No, I would eat it first. The whole point is like the catch, clean, cook. Yeah.
So you get food poisoning and die.
Exactly. I would do such a bad job making the mahi-mahi that I would then subsequently
cleaning
away,
the fish. Yeah, okay, makes sense.
Right. No, because I would want it to be victorious. I would want to like do a great job, and everybody was like, wow, the Ben, that was so tasty. And I'd be like, cool, all right, I'm going to go die now. And they'd be like, all right, bye. Number two for me is really like call the game. Like that's something that I feel like is a huge, like if I ever had the opportunity to call freaking like give me Eastern Albany against Montana State, brother. Like, sure. I don't care. I just feel like it would be such a fun thing to try and see how it would do. I love football. I love talking. And then the
You're in the right place then.
Yeah. The other thing that I really want to try at some point in my life, which I'm not sure you can, this is kind of, I feel like this is a thing you have to do before you have kids. But like, I want to, like you see people like do like survival activities, right? Where they like actually go and like just like live in the woods for a couple of days. I want to try that really badly. To me, that's extremely interesting.
Yeah,
I'm watching a lot of Alone recently, and so in my head, I'm like, I could do this. I have all the skills.
No, it could not be further from what I want. Number three. Now that you say something about like calling a game, like being in the press box and calling a football game, that would probably be in my top three. But for number three, I have drive a motorcycle. I've never driven a motorcycle before.
No, nope. And don't need that.
I would love to do that. I've never had the chance to do that. And I think like more and more recently, like over the last year, I've been like, damn, I kind of want a motorcycle.
Oh my gosh. Have you told Alyssa?
No, absolutely not. And she didn't listen to the podcast, so she's not going to find out.
Yeah.
Number two, I have skydiving. I know this is a cliche one, but I would absolutely love to go skydiving. I guess I've had the opportunity because technically you always have the opportunity. You could just book it, you know, and just do it.
I thought you meant book it like, you know, run up to the top of the skyscraper. I was like,
you can book like a weekend event to do skydiving. Right. So I guess like I've always had the opportunity, but not exactly. Three is I'd love to go like cliff diving into the water in like Australia or Hawaii.
Like base jumping, right? Where you have like a little suit.
Yeah, like something like that. You know, like I just love to do some type of adrenaline, winds going a million miles an hour kind of a thing. Oh,
I want to do things that like freak you out for like 15 seconds. Yes. I want to do things that freak me out over the course of like 4 days.
Yeah, that's not me. I mean, you saying that you want to just like
live in the woods.
I mean, could not relate. You and the fat bears, man. You and the fat bears can go.
Dude, I would win Fat Bear Week. They would take a picture of me with a giant beard, big tummy. Fat bear.
He has become one with Fat Bear Week. Guys, if you're doing any betting this weekend, make sure you're doing it over at MyBookie. Those are the guys that we used for the Thursday podcast when we were coming up with the lines. Oh, by the way, Joe pointed out that we forgot to pick the New England Las Vegas Raiders game. And we did. Oh, for whatever reason, I skipped that game.
I have money on New England's covering six.
Okay, so you have them covering six. I have the I picked the Raiders. So we're
Raiders
different.
Raiders have Henry Ruggs out, and Darren Waller and Josh Jacobs are both questionable. I mean, yes.
Oh boy. Okay. Major well, I probably should have researched that information before making my pick, but here
maybe
we are.
Maybe we're gonna learn something about football, Trevor.
I've never heard of it. No, I'd give up every sport plus football. I'd rather, you know, just go the Ben route and be
challenge.
Go the Ben route and just go into the woods and that's it. Just never hear from me again. That was it. That was Fan Friday. I really enjoyed that one. You guys really brought it with some fun football and non-football questions. I feel like we got into more football this week than normal, which some people really enjoy. Some people are probably like, yo, we listen to you talk football 4 days a week. Get to something else. Talk about goldfish, for goodness sake. But that's why we got CF. You know, that's why we got people to call us cowards and get the Fan Friday question out, because it's a good time every time. Lot of interesting games this weekend, both on Sunday and then on Monday as well. Monday's the big cap off with Kansas City Chiefs, Baltimore Ravens. But there's a strong slate of games this weekend. And if you thought some teams were getting eliminated last week, Ben and I, there's a high percent chance of Ben and I having some strong takes for a lot of teams come Monday morning. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.